Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.
Welcome to Spirits Podcast, a boozy tour through mythology, legends, and folklore. Every week we pour a drink and learn about a new story from around the world. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Julia.
And this is episode 79, Joshen Shuani.
Yep, we went back to China for some good mythology this time around, and I'm really excited about how it turned out.
Me too. I'm also excited about those who just joined us on Patreon, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, which is the place that you can become a member of the Spirits community and get awesome behind-the-scenes extras, recipe cards, bloopers, cut audio, all kinds of great stuff. So welcome and thank you to Morella, Ramon, David, BRG, Rach, Grace, and a tiny Dino.
What a cute tiny name. Dino.
So good. Thank you as always as well to our supporting producer level patrons whose support sustains us. Neil, Philip, Julie, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Jessica, Maria, Cammy, Ryan, Phil Fresh, and Deborah, as well as our legend level patrons, Mercedes, Ashley, Buggy, Rachel, Sandra, Ashley Marie, Leanne, and Cassie.
Yes, you sustain us like nutrients and good water on a battlefield.
It's true. It'll be relevant. Just wait.
It always is.
I love how it took me like 40 episodes to realize that you made that relevant every time.
I do my best. It's not always good, but I do my best.
Julia, what were we drinking during this episode?
Well, Amanda, because it is nearly summertime and because our goddess for this episode is also known as the Dark Lady, I decided to make us some charcoal-infused hard lemonades.
I was very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. People will find the recipe online, though, if they get their show notes.
It was very good.
I was happy with it. I thought it turned out pretty dang good.
Well, before we get into the episode, we wanted to give a couple shout-outs. One to Tila, who is a fan of the show, and we are a fan of her. Just wanted to say hello, Tila. What's up?
And then we also are going to give a shout-out to a new show. This is the Noir and Bizarre. It is an original podcast coming out of WYPR, which is Baltimore's NPR station. And the host, Katie Marquette, examines weird and creepy history, surreal film and fiction, and strange folklore.
So you can tell it is really up our episode, and we actually got a sneak peek of the episode dropping tomorrow, as of the day this episode comes out, where they discover the many myths and personifications of death. So, super my favorite subject. Mm-hmm. So death can be an old washerwoman, can be an angel of doom, can be a shrieking lady in the wind. Sounds like a banshee.
That's my jam.
It absolutely is my jam as well. And we think that you would really enjoy it as well, listeners. So you can find this episode and all of the other ones at WYPR.org/podcastcentral or search for The Noir and the Bizarre wherever you get your podcasts.
Do it up. It is definitely going to be up our listeners' alley.
And we're
going to
include a link in the description as well. That about does it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
So without further ado, enjoy Spirits Podcast, episode 79, Joshen Shuni.
When it comes to direct-to-English translations of names, normally we have some like pretty cool names with some pretty cool translations, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
For example, Persephone's name can be translated as "because she is wise and touches that which is in motion."
I mean, word, like, I don't know, the seasons.
Yep, checks out. Thank you, Greek. Sekhmet has these cool titles like "the one before whom evil trembles" and "she who mauls."
Same.
Yeah. But I think that Joshen Shueni is one of the coolest directly translated names I've ever heard in my entire life.
Please hit me with it.
So it means the mysterious / dark lady of the nine heavens.
I know, want to know, right? Everything.
I'm just thinking of like what that invokes for me. And it's just like riding nine horses into battle with like storm clouds coming down and stuff that. Oh man. Yeah, like just basically Thor Ragnarok. The entire of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, like a nice sort of scarily goth dressed lady coming down from the skies with like nine hellhounds behind her.
Yeah, 100%.
I guess it says something about us that we both picture dark, scary stuff as heaven.
Yeah, checks out. I like it. So she was specifically known as Shueni prior to around 850 CE. Mm-hmm. So that was just the dark or mysterious lady, which God, I wish I could rock a title like that. That is such a cool title.
I know. I would give up Night Hag to be the dark and mysterious lady, because then you're relevant at all times of day.
I realize right now that this is what I want my wrestling, like title to be. So oh, like most sure. wrestlers, Amanda, come out and they'll be like, oh, that's Asuka. But they also get these nicknames from the commentators, like right. The Empress of Tomorrow, which is a real wrestler.
Is she like futuristic?
No, she's just like fucking gorgeous. Okay, she's great. Right. I love her. And now, Amanda, just off the top of your head, I want to know what your wrestling gimmick would be.
My wrestling gimmick?
Yes.
I think I would be like a professorial or librarian type.
Okay.
That would then like rip off whatever outer clothes I have and be like a taskmaster.
Okay.
Not in like a weird porno way, but in a like, I don't know, I could beat you down in the courtroom or here in the ring.
Like She-Hulk.
Yeah, for sure.
There's actually a character in the WWE right now that is like a statistician character where she like goes out with these people. She's like, I calculate that you're going to lose. And it's
I'll be like the operator because my day job is operations at a tech company. Yeah.
That's really, really good.
I think so.
I appreciate your wrestling gimmick. It's very good.
I know. And I could like team up with like a surgeon and I don't know. There's lots of ways this could go.
So rather than describing Joshen Shueni, what she looks like, I think I'm going to let a Ming Dynasty poet named Rong Nyong Tang do it for me.
All right.
So this is from his novel, which translates to water margin. On her head, she has a nine dragon and flying phoenix topknot. And on her body, she wears a red silken gown decorated with golden thread. Blue jade-like strips run down the long gown, and a white jade ritual object rises above her colored sleeves. Her face is that of a lotus calyx, and her eyebrows fit naturally with her hair.
Okay, nice. Very important.
Her lips are like cherries, and her snow-white body appears elegant and relaxed. She appears to be the queen mother who hosts a Saturn peach banquet, but she looks like Chang'e, who resides in the moon palace. Her gorgeous immortal face cannot be depicted, nor can the image of her majestic body.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Wife goals or life goals? That's all I have to say.
I mean, both. Let's be real here.
Yeah.
So her first story comes from a Taoist master known as Do Guanting, and it was written somewhere between 850 and 933 CE. Mm-hmm. In the story, Zhoshan Chuanyi is the teacher of Huangdi, who is a deity also known as the Yellow Emperor, who was one of the legendary sovereigns and cultural heroes of China. He was said to be based off a real person who probably ruled somewhere between 2697 and 2589 BCE.
Jesus, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a real long time ago.
Man, we come from such a new country.
I know, it's so weird.
A very old land that was completely, you know, steamrolled and ruined by colonialization. But yeah, wow.
But like as a country itself, as we understand it now, very, very young, very different. That's over 5,000 years ago, right? Roundabout?
Over four, almost five.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jeez. Wow. Oof. So Yellow Emperor, he is one of those cultural heroes that is said to be the ancestor of all the Chinese people, which we've seen instances of in the past before. We saw it in Korea. We've seen it in Japan, all that kind of instances. So Zhoshan Chuanyi was said to have learned all that she knew from Shi Wangmiu, who is said to be the Queen Mother of the West. She was the dispenser of prosperity, longevity, and eternal bliss, and was said to be the person who opened up the Silk Road trading.
I mean, no big deal.
I mean, kind of a big deal.
Changing the scope of the world.
Just, you know, creating a vast trade network that influences the world to this day. Sure. Good job.
And, like, allows us to have archaeology in a lot of ways, because finding goods from that like originated from other countries and are only able to be traded via the Silk Road are some of the ways in which we can date countries where, like, you know, or artifacts or whatever. It's so cool.
I mean, it makes sense that she's the goddess of prosperity then, huh?
Oh, yeah. By the way, archaeologists, anthropologists, other people who dig for a living, I super want to hear your stories.
please come to us if you dig for a living.
I mean, you could like dig stuff for a living and be like a cultural commentator.
Yeah, please. I appreciate it.
We kind of dig creepy cool things for a living.
I like that. Then there was Chu, who was a tribal leader and who was fighting Huangdi at the time. Nowadays, he's been deified as the god of war and was considered one of the three legendary founding fathers of China.
Wow.
So all of this being background story to, so like we know who the players are in the story in which Zhoshan is introduced.
Right.
So here's the direct story, and then we'll break down the specifics after I read this, okay?
Okay.
The Yellow Emperor came into power. Chu and his brothers, a total of 80 people, all had the bodies of beasts and spoke like human beings. They had bronze heads and iron foreheads. They ate sand and rocks, built military weapons, and intimidated the world. They killed at will and without principle, showing no mercy. The Yellow Emperor governed the state, and he looked at the sky and sighed. Heaven dispatched the mysterious woman down to earth to deliver military messages and sacred talismans to the Yellow Emperor, enabling him to subjugate Chu. The returning statesman, the Yellow Emperor, therefore used them to suppress the enemy and seized control of the eight directions.
What are the eight directions?
I think it's just like the span of the world. Yeah.
Wow.
Like the directions. You know, north, south, east, west, and then in between.
Okay. I was like, things. I don't know, fear, success, despair, like the eight directions of fate is sort of how I was thinking.
I mean, I dig that too. That's a cool interpretation.
Like the foundation myth of foundation myths.
Before this battle between Huangdi and Chu, Zhoshan Chuanyi appeared to Huangdi. Chu had created a thick mist on the battlefield, which was so impenetrable that it obscured both day and night.
Whoa.
So Huangdi is trapped in this mist for days, unable to find his way out, unable to tell if it's day or night, or like even, you know, send his troops in any direction, really.
Yeah, that like completely strips away all the things you mentioned, like direction, the passage of time, stuff like that.
Yeah, it really fucks you up. So finally, Zhoshan Chuanyi is sent to help him. She rides into the mist on a cinnabar phoenix, which is kind of similar to like a flying peacock with long tails, but like on fire.
Not gonna lie, I really thought you said Cinnabon.
No, Cinnabar. Like the Pokemon island where the fire type is.
Whoa! Yeah. That's a cultural relevance that I can get behind.
But Cinnabon also would be adorable.
Like Kiki's Delivery Service, but like flying on a Cinnabon.
I love it. I love it so much.
I'm hungry.
She bakes the Cinnabon on the tail of the phoenix. Yeah. It's very good.
Ooh. Or like what if the phoenix just like brulees stuff wherever she goes?
Man, just like lay giving out you a bunch crispy, of creme sugary
trail.
Oh, I love it so much.
Listen, most foods would be improved by broiling. Prove
That's
me wrong.
That's 100% true.
Come on.
I can't think of something that
wouldn't. I mean, hot foods.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I still can't think of anything that wouldn't be
toast,
improved.
Eggs.
Yep.
Stir fry.
Maybe cereal, not, but, like, that's a cold food.
That is a cold food. Hmm. And also, like, oatmeal for sure. That would be cool. Like, some creme brulee oatmeal. Get at me.
Ooh, now I want that.
Julia just looked off into the distance like she'd seen God.
See, someone on Twitter commented that every time we do this, I'm hungry.
It's true.
And now I'm hungry again. Thank you for that.
Okay, well, in roughly 25 minutes, we can get you some snacks.
Okay, sweet. So, flies in on this phoenix. She's using phosphors and clouds as reins in order to ride the bird, which is just beautiful. I love it so much.
It's such a cool image.
So she's also wearing this amazing outfit that's made of kingfisher feathers, which, have you seen a kingfisher before?
I actually have.
They're like these teal, like, gorgeous looking birds. I love them. They're one of my favorite birds. I have a lot of favorite birds. A side note. And so she's also wearing these 9 different colors in order to represent the 9 heavens.
Wow.
So Huang Di greets her and welcomes her command, to which Zhou Shen Xuanyi tells him, "I base myself on the teachings of the Grand Supreme. If you have any doubts, you may question me."
Wow.
Which so good.
I love that, because normally, you know, a ruler, much less like a deity or a messenger of a deity, would be like, don't question me. This is how it is. Like, prove your faith. Mm-hmm. But she's saying like, hey, listen, I'm here. Ask me your questions. Like, we're ready.
And like, I also really like it because it makes her seem like she's this mouthpiece for something bigger, but also that she's channeling a force that Huang Di can't understand, but she can interpret for him.
Exactly. She is like really like a holy body, you know, that can take in stuff that's raw, you know, like more raw and bigger than a human being can understand. But through that, like that pass through filter, make it something that humans can grok.
Absolutely. Oh man, I like that. Oh, okay. Sorry, I just got all excited.
And wait, is the Grand Supreme, right?
Yeah.
Is that like monotheistic god, or is it more of like a fate, universe force type thing?
It's a god, but it's not monotheistic because she is also a deity.
I see.
It's kind of like the hierarchy of the deities where Zeus or Odin or something like that.
Yeah.
It would
okay.
be that situation. Cool. So Huang Di responds to her, "Chu is cruelly crossing us. His poison is harming all of the black-haired people. The 4 seas are sobbing. No one can protect his own nature or life. I want the art of winning a myriad of victories in a myriad of battles. Can I cut the harm facing my people?" Which just like, I want to break that down just a little bit, especially that last sentence, because he asks not how he can defeat Chu, but instead how he can help his people. And honestly, I think that's kind of what I find to be like the true ideal of a leader.
Yes.
And I think that's really a very defining moment for Huang Di in this story.
Yeah, 100%. I thought the exact same thing when you read it, which is a hero would ask what the like quickest path to glory is.
Mm-hmm.
And this ruler is saying, listen, I know that I can't get everything I want, but like, what I need to know is how I can, you know, minimize or stop this harm. So please help.
Yeah, like how best do I help my people, not just how do I get glory and defeat the enemy?
Yeah. Also, way more of history should be told in poetry. This is beautiful.
I know. I love it. It's great. So when asked this question, Zhou Shen Xuanyi responds by bestowing him objects and artifacts that will allow him to defeat Chu and ascend into heaven as a deity.
Hell yeah.
They're not really specific about what the artifacts are, at least not the source that I was reading, but it's just like they're supposed to be these really beautiful, it's like items of power, basically.
I love like bestowing you with your items of power scenes in movies and books and comic books and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I love it when like a person, it's like a meet cute, but it's a person and their weapons.
Yes, basically. And I just want to finish out the story by mentioning that in the telling of the story, Duan Guanting specifies without Zhou Shen Xuanyi's help, Huang Di would never have achieved this. He would have never defeated Chu in battle. He would have never ascended as a god. It's very like, and because of her help, he was able to do all these things. He would not have been able to do that without the help of the goddess.
Cool.
Which I am a fan of. Give credit where credit is due, especially to women. I don't know why that was a song, but there we go.
I will give you a musical stinger.
Ba-da-ba-ba. Thank you. That's true friendship right there.
Ding.
So, Amanda, because of the story that I told you about Huangdi and Joshen Chuani.
How could I forget?
She is associated with warfare.
Sure.
Obviously. But that's not her only association.
Okay.
Because she's amazing. So she is also associated with magic.
Ooh.
So several Taoist texts give the goddess magical capabilities, such as the ability to turn invisible.
Okay. I mean, like, shrouded in cloud.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how much more in tune with nature and light and obfuscation could you get?
I know, exactly. Oh, God, she's so cool. She's also been known to be able to mobilize the stars, using them to protect China. And dang. I'm not entirely clear from the text I was looking at, like, how that is supposed to be a thing.
I assumed, like, fate and alignment and stuff like that.
That makes sense. I kind of had a turning the stars into soldiers to help protect the world kind of situation.
Whoa.
Like, that was my imagery in the head. I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the cool thing that I had in my brain stuff.
Or I guess with that example of kind of disorientation mm-hmm. on the battlefield that we learned about earlier, you could also, like, use the constellations in the heavens to guide people somewhere.
Navigation.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. Oh, cool.
Or even, like, sending constellations or sending messengers, you know, omens, examples of, like, oh, hey, I'm seeing, like, this constellation in the sky that represents whatever, so I should, you know, be cautious, or I should be bold, or I should, like, go by sea, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I like that a lot. Oh, man. Now I want to, like, see the movie version of that.
I know, you know what I mean? The good movie version.
Oh, yeah, of course. Not the shitty movie version.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000 lately. And, oh, man, there's a lot of bad movies out there.
Do you know what I've been watching recently?
Tell me.
Animal Planet's The Zoo.
Yes, you did. You texted me about this.
I did.
I am obsessed.
It's a reality show about the Bronx Zoo.
I'm obsessed.
I love Mert the Goose. And everything about it is beautiful. It's about just, like, the zookeepers and just, like, fellow New Yorkers in the Bronx just loving animals and taking care of them and just, like, being so conservation and, like, wildlife, you know, health-minded. I always disliked going to zoos as a kid because I felt so badly for the animals. But kind of modern, you know, zookeeping, it's all about, like, preserving species and rehabilitation, stuff like that.
Right.
So it's just, it's feel good. It's adorable. It's so well edited. Oh, it's so good.
Can we take a trip to the Bronx Zoo, please?
Yes, we can!
Because I've been trying to drag Jake
yes.
for, like, 2 years at this point, and
yes.
I want to go real bad.
Yes.
Before, like, the schools let out and shit, you know what I mean?
I absolutely do. We should go very soon.
Okay.
Double date.
Yes.
Someone among us can Instagram stories it.
Yes.
Oh my God, 100%. Please.
Okay, good. We're going to go to the zoo. Now, back to the story.
Okay.
Her invisibility ability, that's a thing that I just said,
yeah.
Is exercised through her acolytes, known as the Six Ding Jade Maidens.
Huh.
So the Jade Maidens each have a different ability that includes invisibility.
Okay. Like one per?
Yes. So okay. For instance, one can hide her physical body, another can conceal her destiny, one's fortune, spirit, soul, etc.
Wow.
It's really cool. So, like, there's physical
right,
invisibility,
right.
But then, you know, like, someone
there's
could be
metaphysical
like,
invisibility.
I want to know what your future is. Be like, ha ha, you don't know. I won't
tell
you.
That's amazing, though. Like, especially when your powers involve the realm of, like, time, fortune, predestination, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need, like, protection and abilities in
hell
those,
yeah.
you know, arenas, too.
Mm-hmm. Especially, like, as a goddess or as just, like, non-mortal
yeah.
deities. You'd be like, eh, I'm not going to tell you my future or fortune, or you cannot see my spirit. I just like that.
Yeah, or I mean, imagine, like, in a movie or a book, you'll have, like, an oracle, you know, mm-hmm. who kind of, like, looks at stuff to come and mm-hmm. says, oh, well, beware this person or you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, imagine being able to cloak yourself from such imagining. Like,
yeah.
you are, like, the ultimate kind of stealth bomber coming in
hell
to
yeah.
change fate in a way that no one can see.
Which leads into my next point.
Ooh.
The fact that Joshen Chuani originally learned her invisibility as a military strategy, where it was used to defeat enemies and protect the state.
Yeah.
There you go.
Boom.
So worship for her invisibility is also done in the hope that concealing their bodies will allow them to expel evil and return to righteousness.
Wow. That's some, like, hierarchy of needs shit.
I like that a
lot. You know, where you transcend the physical and can
do
the rest. And
then you can purge your body of evil or, you know, what have you.
Wouldn't it be nice to leave this flesh sack behind?
I mean, yeah.
Or like, selectively be able to be in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Astral projection kind
yes,
of style.
Precisely.
I could get down with some astral projection.
My God, so could I.
Oh,
we could
yeah.
be in the Bronx Zoo right now.
We could. Let's just lay back and astral project over.
They have a herd of gazelle, Julia. A herd of gazelle.
They have like snow leopards, which are my favorite.
So pretty. They have little baby tiny monkey friends.
Oh God, I'm just getting excited about the zoo now. We need to focus up. Okay. Aside from war and magic, she's also associated with sex and sexuality.
Huh. I was going to say, we haven't really touched on that so far. Yeah.
A book from the Han Dynasty that bears her name in the translation to English, The Mysterious Woman Classic,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a horse race a little bit.
Sounds like a cocktail.
Oh man.
Also sounds like a horse race.
And that's going to be our cocktail for this episode. I will come up for it later.
I feel like lavender Earl Grey vibes, but you do what you will.
No, I'm with you there.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Hold on. That with like a little bit of like floral gin.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe like a dash of sake or something like that. Like really like pop.
Okay. Yeah, the
with like a little like hint of vanilla there. Ooh, okay. Moving on. Okay, so this book, The Mysterious Woman Classic, is specifically a handbook in which, and it's in the form of a dialogue.
Yes.
About sex.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it makes sense to me.
So they were actually a pretty popular book. Most upper class households in the Han Dynasty had this book in their libraries.
Oh my goodness.
A 7th century poet, Liu Zhongshan, wrote a book that contains descriptions of the sexual arts that he said were transmitted to him by Joshan Chuani herself.
I mean, I respect it.
All right. Like, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, buddy, but...
Listen, if that's where you learned your sexual arts from, I'm going to buy that book. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's a good marketing strategy.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I'm just thinking about how good, like, a book by Aphrodite about sex would be.
Okay, which god would you want to teach you about sex? Obviously, not Zeus. That's not even a question.
No.
I'm thinking like maybe Loki, because it's like you're having sex. Boom! I'm a snake.
Yo, I'm a horse now.
Yeah,
a lady horse.
You're a horse. What? No, that'd be scary.
No, that would not be good.
Maybe maybe Urzuli Danter.
Oh fuck yeah! That's
yeah
it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
any of the Urzulis really.
Seriously,
they're all pretty dope. Danter would be like, this man fucked you over, so we're gonna kill him? And you'd be like, I don't know about that. I don't know about that, Danter.
I'm just saying.
Like, well, he's dead already.
I'm just saying, Sex with a Vengeance, that's a book title.
Yes, it is. Write it right now. Anyway. and this will tie into the last aspect we'll be discussing. The sexual practices that were associated with Joshan Chuani were compared to alchemy and practices commonly used for prolonging life.
Hmm.
She even tells Huang Di in certain texts that her sexual practices are like, quote, the intermingling of water and fire. It can kill or bring new life depending on whether or not one uses the correct methods. Which, God, isn't that the fucking truth?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just dropping straight fire on us
not
right
wrong.
Now. Damn. I want that, like, in my tombstone.
Yeah.
That's my tombstone quote.
I'm not calling mine yet. I think okay. I have quite some time yeah, to make some interesting puns about death. But, you know, but physical, you know, effects aside, emotionally it's also true. Like, sex can deepen a bond or it can make you feel really alienated. Like,
yeah.
that any kind of intimacy, you know, has that effect of either, you know, yes, this risk was worth it, and, you know, it either solidifies, you know, or proves something I thought, or, you know, maybe it reveals to you that you, you know, think differently or weren't connected like you thought you were, mm-hmm. or, you know, something different is important to you.
Yeah.
So as much as I giggled the first time around, there is some truth there as
no,
well.
No, there's definitely some truth there. Oh, man. That just makes me sad because I was thinking about the, like, incel discussion that's been going on
mm-hmm.
on, like, Twitter and in the news lately and stuff
yeah.
like that. And, like, sex is a very defining thing for a lot of relationships, especially now that we're very open about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think that anyone has the right to sex. And you,
yeah.
I mean, you do have the right to sex with yourself.
Yes.
But not with other people. Other people
it's like
are
you
not
you have the
objects.
Right to pursue happiness. You don't have the right to be happy. You have the right to, like, pursue sex, but not mm-hmm. the right to have it.
Right, exactly. Which I believe that Joshan Chuani would agree with us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's this really interesting aspect that is associated with Joshan Chuani, and it's basically this idea that the human body is a microcosm of the universe, and because of this, the gods are present within the human body.
My eyes are very wide.
I know, this is very cool.
Yeah.
This is, like, my favorite philosophical thing that I've ever read about anything in our research for
Whoa.
These episodes. It's very cool. Because the gods are present within the human body, this term is physiological microcosmology.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let that sit there.
Wow.
Physiological microcosmology.
I need to know everything, please.
I got you. So in this belief, Joshen Chuuni is located in the central median of the body, and she is associated with the circulation of breath, which is said to nourish the spirit and provide longevity.
Yes. Also not wrong.
I mean, like, completely accurate. Good job. So, for instance, one is instructed to send their breath down, meaning take deep breaths, so that it might enter the goddess's mouth inside them.
Whoa.
Nourishing the goddess would mean elongating one's lifespan or even achieving immortality.
I mean, that's completely right. Like, think about the kinds of things that we do when we do deep breathing. It's about calming and centering and focusing,
yeah,
and like
grounding,
drawing up a different strength within you, feeling renewed. Completely accurate.
Oh, God. It's like, it's so freaking cool. So, for instance, a text from the 5th century states, "Her pearl of great brilliance shines to illuminate the inside of the adept's whole body so that he can extend his years and not die."
Yeah, man.
Another text says that the mysterious woman is the mother of the way of the void and nothingness. And the way to call her is this, and I quote, "Close your eyes and meditate on a white breath between your shoulders. In its center is a white tortoise. On the top of that tortoise is the mysterious woman."
Wow.
God, I just love meditation so much.
I know. And I bet there are a lot of modern practices that relate to or could be kind of related to what we're talking about now. So listeners, you know, that do breath work or meditation, I'd love to hear some of your practices or visualizations. Ever since I saw Fight Club when I was a little kid, and the sort of like, you know, go into your subconscious and like
visualize your penguin.
Exactly. That just really struck a chord with me. I don't know why. It's so fascinating. Like, this is the kind of stuff that human beings got pretty right pretty early, that, you know, deep breathing, focus, it calms, it, you know, makes you feel more alive.
Yeah. You know who has some very good meditation practices on their podcast?
Who?
Our good friend Zach Valenti.
Yeah!
On his focus.af podcast. He does a, like, usually 5 to 10 minute segment at the end called Calm AF, where he leads you through a guided meditation, and it's very nice and very cool. And
his voice
I use
is
it
very
a lot.
Calming.
He does have a very calming voice
when he's not yelling about space problems.
That's true. 100% true. She is also associated with alchemy, said to prepare elixirs for other deities, and specifically with a process called Nyandan, or inner alchemy. Which I know how much you love alchemy, Amanda.
I sure do.
So I'm going to go a little bit into it. So basically, it's this physical, mental, and spiritual practice in Taoist tradition that is used to prolong life and create an immortal spiritual body that would survive after death.
What is the practice?
I don't know, like, really the specifics, but the basics of it are the human body becomes a cauldron in which essence, breath, and spirit are cultivated in order to improve physical, mental, and emotional health, and eventually one becomes an immortal.
Wow. That also tracks with, like, for me personally, thinking about food as fuel for your body, and not like what I can or can't eat or what's good or bad, but, you know, what will fuel my body right now and make it be its, like, you know, most functional and holistic and good feeling.
Sure.
Is for me a really, like, well-adjusted and productive way to think about a thing that I have a complex relationship with.
Yeah.
And that is so true, that, like, I also often kind of talk and think of myself as, like, an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Like, my ecosystem is, you know, carefully calibrated and likes a certain temperature and a certain humidity and, like, needs more sleep sometimes and more water and more rest and more social time. And kind of when all these things are in balance, then I'm sort of, like, primed and ready to go. But the sort of, like, leveling up of that mindset is like, oh, no, you could, like, you know, shuffle off this mortal coil and become completely immortal if it all goes correctly.
Well, I mean, your internal ecosystem is very similar to the physiological microcosmology.
Yes.
Which I just like saying those words together.
I know. I feel like
very cool.
Anytime someone will actually ask me at a bar about finance, I'll just be like, physiological cosmology, get at me.
Yeah.
But I mean, so true. Like, I mean, A, we're all star stuff, right? Like, the fact that all atoms in a body have been atoms of other things,
yes,
and we're born in stars. Like, it's amazing. I don't need to know
it.
Anything else about the world.
It's
everything's
very
fine.
Cool.
And also as a, I don't know, like, our experience of the universe is necessarily mediated and based, obviously, in our bodies. And like, we are the thing around which everything else orbits. Mm-hmm. Hopefully not, because that's a very self-centered way to look at the universe. Mm-hmm. But like, literally, you know, that is true. And the fact that you can kind of draw that metaphor between like, you know, I am the nucleus of like my experience of the universe, mm-hmm. but also like that is true within me. Yeah. And I am one, like, you know, fraction of a molecule of the rest of the cosmos. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, that puts a lot of things in perspective in a really good way.
Right. And I think it's kind of that, in my head, it's kind of this telescoping thing.
Yeah.
Like, is there a small you also existing within your physiological microcosm that feels the same way and also has their own physiological microcosm and so on and so forth?
I mean, there sort of is, because yeah. like, I can think about my brain. So therefore, what am I? Like, what is the I that is able to think about my own brain? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So there has to be something in there.
We're getting very philosophy 101 here, but I'm into it.
I know. Like, I don't know. When I first read about these things, I was just like, oh, man, I figured it out. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Someone, you know, it honestly blew my mind.
Yeah.
And to be able to revisit it and know that human beings have been thinking about these kinds of things for, you know, 1 and 3 and 5,000 years, mm-hmm. Is like the best, I don't know, kind of revelation for me.
But I also like this idea of like the internal alchemy. Like, I am tending to my physical body, but I'm also tending to like my emotional and mental health as well.
Yes.
In order to, you know, like just take care of myself and prolong my life. And like, that's such a genuinely like concept that we still struggle with today. And the fact that they're talking about it back then is kind of insane to me, but I love it. You know what I mean?
It absolutely is. And in the way that kind of a modern version of that is like the self-care discourse.
Oh, yeah.
Where sure. like, okay, yes, there are ways in which self-care is kind of like commercialized and is economically privileged, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But I really can jive with the ethos behind it, which is that, you know, the stuff you surround yourself with and the way you treat yourself is as or more important than, you know, anything else you can do in the world.
Yeah.
That surrounding yourself, whether it's like for me, having my house be like reflective of my personality and neat and calming and like situated to my atmosphere makes everything else possible in my life. Or yeah. maybe for others, it's social time or it's alone time or it's the music or books or other, you know, the foods that they eat, mm-hmm. Or stuff that makes them feel really well situated. And like, that is the thing to take care of before you can like level up into other stuff.
Exactly. And just like understanding, hey, we exist more than just as physical beings. We have to take care of those other things or else we're not going to live the most fulfilled life that we can.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And Josh Anchoini does a great job in just embodying all of that.
Also, like, what fashion, man.
Oh,
what
so good.
What powerful colors.
Oh, man.
I want a top knot of dragons.
Almost as good as Inanna's.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Look, I would say they are on the runway together, just like posing.
Oh, yeah. I know we did our series of water spirit pins, mm-hmm. but I feel like there could be a pin set of like high femme goddesses.
Oh, I love it already. someone pitch us those images because I want to see what those would look like.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, man. I want to just kind of leave this one off and saying like, once again, we found a goddess that I want to just embody in my everyday life.
Yeah.
100%. I want to have that sort of fearless military knowledge, the like magic and like mysteriousness to myself. And yeah. then also just the emotional understanding like, hey, I'm more than just a physical being. I need to take care of the rest of myself. I need to take care of the universe that exists within myself.
And therefore taking care of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like writing your own wrongs and taking care of yourself is an act of goodness and of, you know, positive impact on the universe at large.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the idea of infinite me's all the way down within me, that are universes within my universe, I find to be
kind of creepy.
And also kind of cool.
Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at Spirits Podcast. We also have all our episodes, collaborations, and guest appearances, plus merch on our website, spiritspodcast.com.
Come on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Throw us as little as $1 and get access to audio extras, recipe cards, director's commentaries, and patron-only live streams.
And hey, if you like the show, please share us with your friends. That is the best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.